welcome to It Had to Be Said. It's been a little while, but we're back and refocused. In the future, we're going to continue analyzing and dissecting the Red Pill. I think that that's an important document, a document not meant for outsiders to see that gives some insight into right-wing radical thought. But I also want to focus on right-wing terrorists. And before I feel like you can enter into that world, you first need to understand conspiracy theories. And that's what I'm going to focus on before getting to actual individuals or movements within the right, within the extreme right. And I think that we need to understand conspiracies because they're so fundamental to how these people think and their worldviews. And just in a broader sense, just maybe broader interest to how we in the West view the world. And I do think that you could expand and, you know, expound upon this whole idea of Western culture and just how integral the idea of conspiracy is in it. So when considering this, especially if we're talking about right-wing conspiracy theories, I automatically went to anti-Semitism because it's so in your face and so obvious, whether or not it's explicit. If it's not explicit, it's just such an easy copy and paste. And we'll talk a little bit about that in this episode. But in order to understand the anti-Semitism, it felt like you needed to really kind of get to Christianity too. But even more granular, even root cause, maybe some things that aren't necessarily even bad, but just realities that are worthy of exploring. And I think at the very core, something that I stumbled upon was just the idea of this, that in order for there to be a conspiracy, there has to be right and wrong. There has to be good and evil. So first of all, you have to acknowledge that as being a reality, that in the world, there is this dichotomy, right? And I think that that's a pretty hefty thing to just accept before we go anywhere else. But even with that kind of dichotomatic thinking, where does that come from, this dichotomy of viewing things? And there's a lot of great, you know, psychology based around this, but I think, and this isn't supported with research, it's kind of an opinion, but stumbled upon it that if you get to the very essence of, you know, humanity, what humans are and how we're different than a rock or a dog or something, through evolution and the development of our brains and the ability to compartmentalize things and understand patterns and understand and predict consequences of actions, that, you know, we've stumbled upon the understanding or realization that we will die. And it's not something that, you know, is in the process, right? Where maybe you could argue an animal knows it's dying or something, right? But I mean, it's something that we live with. And that constant agitation and, you know, neurosis and effect that it has on our body, very real effect with chemicals in the brain, it does feel like the understanding of the dichotomy of life and death might be the core of this, right? Or at least one of them. And that's an opinion, but, you know, if it is the core of this idea that, you know, the most basic dichotomy and maybe how we started viewing things in dichotomy is with life and death. The idea that there is good and evil leading to religion and then that cognitive dissonance, meaning cognitive consonance and a relief of that stress and anxiety over death, because it's not something we understand. And if we can't understand it, we can't control it. And that causes us, well, displeasure, right? Agitation. So this idea that we now have an explanation, I think that nicely kind of rolls into religion and the very beginning of conspiracy and conspiratorial thought, because in order to have a conspiracy, there needs to be a dichotomy. And I think it's very worth asking the question of, you know, yes, life and death that exists, but when we apply this to other things in the world, whether or not that's where we got it from, you know, is this way of thinking accurate? Because we do it often. ultimately this requires a conflict, right? For there to be this dichotomy, there needs to be a conflict. And that conflict often represents opposing choices that humans can make, right? At least while we're alive. And that's something that we can control. And well, that's when we get into moral judgments and all these things that rocks and plants and animals and volcanoes and crap don't do, but we do for some reason. Now, there's modern psychology, and there's a lot of takes on this. We're going to kind of stay away from that. I think metaethics might be, you know, something to look into. It's beyond me. I have no problem saying that. But, you know, if we're talking about conspiracies, this way of viewing the world with good and bad is a good place to start. At the core of this way of thinking, which I don't know if you have you ever really stopped to think about this, if, you know, is this way of thinking accurate or not? At the core of this way of thinking, I think is free will. And well, the free will for people to make bad decisions. And conspiracies relieve the individual of responsibility of making bad choices. And instead, it places it on something else that can be scapegoated, right? So, you know, whatever that other thing is, but once it's placed on the responsibility, whatever the other thing is, you now have a dichotomy. You have you, the good thing, the pure thing, and that's one of those key words that should have alarms because it leads into fascism later, but you being the pure thing, right? And then the evil being this other thing. And there you go. You now have a conspiracy. If this evil thing is actively trying to undermine you, that's it, right? But this whole exercise alleviates the individual responsibility for their decision making and ultimately serves to relieve agitation and stress and cognitive dissonance. And so there's results, right? It works. And it's a very simple explanation for why we do this stuff. It provides results. You know, just because you do something and it does provide results, it doesn't mean the results are good. I mean, you know, maybe alcohol abuse or something would be an example of that. But people generally don't do things that don't work for them. Whether or not it's actually good for them in the long run is a different question. And I don't know. I mean, have you ever stopped to think about this? You know, is this right? Do we organize animals like this and plants and gravity and natural forces into the notion that there are good and bad? Right? And we don't. And so why do we, unless we're making like an analogy or something, you know, to humans. So why do we do it with humans? You know, where do humans get this narrative from? Well, I think it's easy to say, you know, whether or not that this, you know, this way of viewing things in dichotomy comes from life and death or day and night or seasons or whatever. I think it's very easy to get to religion, right? And this is such a huge topic. I'm not going to delve into all the religions and their views on the world and shades of gray or dichotomies, but in general, big in general, I think you can go back to Zoroaster with Zoroastrianism and what would later become Iran. This is kind of what some people would argue is the foundation of Christianity or monotheism. But in with the idea of Zoroaster and the dividing up of pantheons into groups, right? And this would be like the, I guess what you would call the Iranian, even though that's not technically correct because that's a nation in the modern world, but that area in the world, right? The pantheons of gods that existed there for the people. When you start dividing them up into groups, when you start grouping them and organizing them, you have good groups and bad groups, right? Or at least groups with some good stuff and bad stuff, and you can compare them. And we know that these gods aren't actually like hanging out someplace, right? And at some point they were created. Now, I mean, whatever, maybe a person hit their head on a rock and had a vision, but whether or not the person made up a story or got high off of a plant, right? The idea is that these gods are generally somehow representations of human motivations, right? That contextualize conflict of free will and how to handle that. right? We have a choice of what we're going to do, and we can think about it, right? A turtle doesn't necessarily think about the consequences of walking on a rock, right? I mean, it might, you know, life and death or something like that, but it's not like weighing the moral implications. So we can do that. And so these gods, and you'll see this in other ancient pantheons too, often take on, right, human motivations, human forms, into these kind of very generalized things, right? Strength or sexuality or whatever. But the idea is, once you start grouping these things, then you can have dichotomies, right? And you can end up with a coherent evil force, right? Or a group of evil forces. And while it's complicated with modern ethics and psychology, it can be parsed out. In general, I think that it's open to question, that this whole view of there being a dichotomy, right? And I think it's an interesting thing. It's not what I'm going to go down the rabbit hole on, but just the human psychology of dichotomy and why we apply it to things and how that came to be, because it is core to, of course, there being conspiracies. But yeah, why do we have this assumption that there's an evil force out there trying to get us all to be bad, right? Or to take advantage of us? It is the very basis of conspiracies. And really, there's no difference between, you know, believing that the devil is out there actively working in concert with demons to manipulate your actions, to take advantage of you. Maybe that's like in your soul or something. And let's be real, you know, maybe in the West, corporations or a political party attempting to do something to manipulate you to gain money. Now, there are differences, right? There are examples of corporations actually doing this, right? But the idea that they're acting in concert in an organized way behind the scenes, along with whatever groups of people, right, to take advantage of you in this specific way, it sounds a lot like early Christians talking about the devil, right? So yeah, you know, the earliest conspiracies were centered around your soul and demons and devils and stuff. But the idea is that there's this group of bad things out there working in concert trying to manipulate you. And the idea of purity of the soul is interesting. I'm not going to get into it here, but there's definitely fascism laden within the term purity, isn't there? And nowadays, it's just very interesting how that interacts with conspiracy theories, whether we're talking about souls or race or food that we eat or our lifestyles. It's a complicated thing. But anyway, I mean, the question is, do you really believe this, like on its face? Do you really believe in this kind of, you know, compartmentalized world view of there being, you know, good things and bad things, and these bad things actively trying to manipulate you? If you don't believe in devils running around, then I don't understand. I don't know why it would be easier to then say, well, this political party or this corporation or this or that are essentially the same thing, because what you're doing is you're taking a story and you're just switching out the actors. The greatest and longest lasting conspiracy of Western heritage is definitely tied to Christianity's anti-Semitism. And this goes, you know, all the way back to plagues, to lending practices, to the Bible itself, and then before the Bible with the actual existence of Christ, if he was an actual thing. But the story of corrupt Pharisees and the crowd of Jewish people supposedly telling Pontius Pilate to execute Christ. You know, Mel Gibson made millions off of basically torture porn depicting just hours of anti-Semitic tropes that are tied to this. And it's so tied to our culture, whether or not you actually believe it or not. The lessons of it, the images of it, the template of that story, that archetype, again, whether or not you switch out the actors in it, is such a core fundamental thing. It's not something we're born with, but God, it's sure close to it, isn't it? At least in the Western world. And every single New World Order, One World Order, globalist, socialist, communist conspiracy at some point or another copies from anti-Semitic conspiracies of early Christians. Whether it fits in the players or not. And so, you know, maybe a Facebook, Instagram, Twitter appropriate version of this would be the world is run by a handful of greedy bankers. And then, you know, maybe a 4chan, Telegram version of this would be the world is run by a handful of greedy Jewish bankers. It's the same thing. It's the same story, right? It's just one is, well, more appropriate, but it's a copy and paste of the same template. And I'm not going to go down that the hole of explaining that at the moment, because that's an episode in itself that will happen in the future, these anti-Semitic tropes. But it's the idea of how easy it is to just come up with a conspiracy like this of, you know, these evil bad actors working in concert against you. And just looking at the examples from just Christianity and then anti-Semitism, how they can be so easily recreated. And QAnon is a great example of that. The idea that you are good, that you're pure, ding, 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 righteous, and that there is a global dichotomy of evil, which is organized plotting against you, is as old as the devil himself, right? The satanic panic of the 80s and anti-Semitic tropes going back to the Bible. Throw in anti-communism as well. And again, that's another episode, but the idea that, you know, communism is synonymous with Judaism. And in the US, it's combined with Satanism too, because of the 80s, you know, kind of the ending of the Cold War and the rise of the Satanic Panic and just how ridiculous that was. And I'll even stop myself here and, you know, put it this way. If you think the Satanic Panic of the 80s was stupid, then you just have to be consistent in logic. Most of modern conspiracy theories, you also have to think are stupid, because it's the same template. It's the same thing that they're using. And what I mean by template, if not clear on that, is you're taking the same story structure and you're just swapping out the players in it, the actors in it, but it's the same thing. It's like writing a song using the same chord progression. It's just what you're doing within those chords is a little bit different. Maybe you're playing a whole chord in one song and you arpeggiate it in another or what have you. It's the same damn thing. Okay, but putting a bow on this, right, and I do feel obliged to say this because we brought it up. Of course, fascists combined Judaism with communism as well, Marx and Lenin being Jewish. And this was a huge influence in German propaganda during the rise of the Third Reich. And it was something that was brought home to the US as well once the Cold War started. And so all those old anti-Semitic tropes, all those conspiracies against Jewish people going back to the Bible were just repackaged and sold in communism because, well, there's a lot to it, but it was, all right. So, I mean, you know, this view of the world, I mean, Christ, what we had, George W. Bush came out and labeled modern nations an axis of evil. I mean, that's biblical. Right. But it's so core to how we view things. Right? I mean, it's a mind melt. But and I think the challenge is to anyone that, you know, might believe, like, I don't know, false flag or, you know, modern conspiracies. Have you ever stopped to just think about this? Like, where are the underpinnings, the very basic things, the idea that there's a dichotomy in the world at all, that that's actually a thing? Like, have you stopped to actually think about that? Okay, but back to conspiracies. You have to ask yourself, I mean, you know, do you believe in Satan? Do you think Jewish people are trying to control the world? Because that's where 99% of Western conspiracy theories come from in context, right? And this is what I'm getting at. If you think the Satanic Panic was dumb, but you believe in QAnon, you're not being logically consistent in the way that you're thinking. You're making exceptions for one and not the other. Greed. Greed is another one. And this is another anti-Semitic trope that we can get to. But greed is, you know, a disparaging term. It's largely subjective or based on moral values derived from, I don't know, religion, I guess. And you would be surprised how you, the atheist or agnostic, might have incorporated these moral values into what you might say are ethics. It's a whole topic worthy of its own episode. But the early lending practices and ideas of interest by Christians is a whole thing unto itself, and how that vilified Jewish people. But anyway, so you see how easy it is to make up new conspiracies using religious good and evil stories and these anti-Semitic tropes that have existed in Western culture for so long. All right, so let's do it now, right? Here's one. I thought of it, honestly, right before I started recording. So let's say big pet food, right? So these corporate pet food companies produce dog treats. And they're mean. You don't need dog treats. You can just give dogs food, right? It's better for them. It's healthier for them. So you know, they make this thing that we don't need, doesn't serve a purpose, and it makes dogs fat, right? And so what that does is it increases their sales for their specialty dog foods, right? Their diet food and the organic food and grass fed shit. And so they make more money, right? And who owns big dog food? Well, greedy people. Who are those greedy people? Those greedy, fill in the blank. And you know, you went from like a Facebook post to a Telegram post pretty quick, didn't you? But it's the same story, man. It's the same thing. And this is getting, you know, a bit everywhere. So let's refocus. The basic idea of evil conspiracy and where we get that idea from, as if it's objectively true. All right, we'll dive into satanic panics and witches and anti-Semitism and stuff in future episodes. But one of the most basic ideas is a dualistic belief as well in the world, in the afterlife. We kind of talked about that, and the idea that the material world is bad and afterlife is good, unless you're a bad person. That there are forces which sway you, right? It's a giant plot, that you're an actor in a narrative, that you're the protagonist, and there's actually antagonists out there, right, working against you. In a dualistic view of the material world and afterlife, or good forces and evil forces, there's also this idea of being enlightened, and ding, 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 right? Another kind of questionable term that we just accept as kind of being a good thing. Another idea or assumption that, you know, we don't critique is this idea of what enlightenment means. And, you know, what does this mean? Is it a thing? Or is it just something that we just kind of go with and roll with? You know, enlightenment in its earliest notions was the idea of knowing more or seeing more than others, usually involving, you know, knowing God or seeing God or hearing from God. And that's all a conspiracy is, right? Or a cult membership even. It's pretending to have insight into something that others don't. You know, have you ever thought about the entire narrative like that? That it's just this idea of you being you being special, right? You knowing more than other people. It's very, I mean, so where can you get backed into a corner with this? Well, you know, if you're enlightened through, I don't know, meditation, and you find peace or something, you know, maybe you hear God or you become one with yourself. Okay, fine, right? But then you've unsealed all the, you know, the Bible has 1,000 seals and all this stuff, whatever, right? But there's a spiritual part to it, which gets you to some spiritual thing that is supposed to be better than your life right now. Okay, well, you know, what about modern day? Well, I can think of one. You know, anytime you're in some kind of just horrible conversation with some right-wing person, and you know they're trying to convince you something, like by giving people food stamps, you're actually, you know, teaching them to imprison themselves, that the welfare state is actually is somehow an inverted state of modern slavery. That's a fun one that you hear. Yeah, and then you obviously say, well, that's really odd, because most African American people, you know, vote Democrat, and we can condemn Democrats, but in this duality, again, another kind of dichotomy in our world of a two-party system, they're the ones that are better suited to maintain these programs that help these marginalized people. But it's this idea of, you know, whoever this dude is, right, typing this thing, like, it's the idea that they have insight into something, right, that you know, no, social programs are actually bad, right? And that I guess all African Americans are on them, you know, that's the theory from these kind of people. And the idea that this population of folks isn't enlightened enough to understand that this person gets it, right? This white dude, let's say in suburban Ohio, I don't know, understands, right, all this more. And that, you know, if only he could teach these other people, these poor Black people, about how bad they're being treated by not being in abject poverty because we have a social welfare state, as if this is true for all Black. It's just, the whole thing is horrible. But you see how this idea of being enlightened can get you into weird situations, right? This fellow is enlightened on the situation. And if only the other people knew. No. But again, it's one of these ideas of, have we ever tried to stop and view maybe self-narratives, ourselves as a central protagonist in the story? Have we ever stopped to say, that's not really what's happening, right? Okay, I'm going to stop there, because I think, you know, to go further in that direction, I think you have to talk about anti-Semitism. And if we're talking about the Western world and conspiracies, yeah, you have to start with Christianity, but in conjunction with anti-Semitism. So those are huge topics that will be future episodes. And, you know, before we conclude, I do want to just kind of pivot quickly to maybe more psychological look at dichotomy and the way that we think like this. This was from an article, What is Wrong with Dichotomous Thinking? It is time to think beyond dichotomy. And there's this quote in here, which I had never heard before. So I'm citing this, that cites a quote, but the quote goes like this. An old joke has it that there are two kinds of people in the world. Those who believe there are two kinds of people and those who don't. And doesn't it just get so fundamental, right? It's like there are two kinds of people in the world. Those that, you know, believe in shadowy cabals and those that don't. And of course, the reality is, I think, shades of gray, right? But it's just so fundamental and so great. From this article, which actually didn't provide a whole lot of insight for this, but there was another little piece I thought was just worthy of saying, that the idea that, you know, critical analysis requires complexity and the ability to think beyond simplistic dichotomies, and that it's incumbent upon us to complicate matters. There's a general populist kind of wisdom. It's, you know, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, keep it simple, stupid. The reality is that in many situations, you can't keep it simple. And that if you do, even if you're trying to apply some reasoning like Occam's razor or something, you're either doing it incorrectly or you're way overdoing it and leaving out a lot of contradictory scenarios that, you know, lead you to a place that is probably just confirming a bias anyway. So the idea that sometimes things are complicated and that they should be complicated. The APA had a definition for dichotomous thinking: the tendency to think in terms of polar opposites, that is, in terms of best and worst, without accepting the possibilities that lie between these two extremes. The term has been used to characterize the tendency of people with major depressive disorder to view mildly negative events as extremely negative, but the potential role of such thinking in other conditions, such as eating disorders and personality disorders, is under investigation, also called polarized thinking. So, you know, it's interesting that modern psychologists are actually attaching this way of thinking to mental illness, number one. But, you know, number two, I think that this idea of polar opposites is important, and they're not being anything in between. And this is why I think that they, you know, are looking at major depressive disorder with mood swings. But the idea that the options are two extremes and that there's nothing there in the center. And that really is the view of someone who is agitated, right? The view of someone who is extremely frustrated or in a mental state that's not, I guess, what you would call calm, right? And there's a lot of different terms for that. I mean, whatever, I'm not a psychologist, but I've been to one. So there's a lot of different terms for that. You know, catastrophic thinking is one that I could think of. Future telling, I think it was called, fortune telling, all these different things where, you know, we wildly over-exaggerate a scenario into dichotomic thinking. And you know, I do wonder if, yeah, okay, maybe there, you know, is mental illness, but are there cultural underpinnings to this too, you know, based on some things that we've talked about to this point? It's also interesting that modern psychology does the opposite of, you know, thinking in terms of dichotomy. I'm thinking of, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy specifically. I mean, it literally does the opposite. You have to sit down with a worksheet and break apart your very black and white eggs all in one basket type of thinking into steps so that you can step back and analyze it and say, okay, that's what I thought. This is what I see. Do I think the same thing? You know, where's that difference at? And then examine whether or not what you're thinking was actually true and go on from therapy with that. But it's clear that at least modern psychology kind of views dichotomous thinking, well, not in a great light, right? So, you know, why do we cling to this? Why is this something that we still do? Well, I kind of think that it might not be a choice. In Shermer's 2000 book, How We Believe, he argues that our brains have evolved as pattern recognition machines. And this is kind of from like a synopsis of the book or a summary of the book, that our brains create meaning from patterns that we see, or at least that we think we see in nature. And this makes sense, you know, hunting and gathering, understanding spatial recognition, being able to get back home, knowing where the food was, stuff like that. Often the patterns are real, while other times they are manifestations of chance. Pattern recognition tells us something valuable about the environment from which we can make predictions that help us with survival and reproduction. So, you know, there's an evolutionary part to this as well. The idea that we actively seek out patterns because those patterns benefit us. And the example that it gives here is, you know, if you're walking on a path in the forest and you hear a bush rattle around, you might run. And, you know, maybe only 10% of the time there's a rattlesnake in the bush, but that 10% of the time and over evolution of hundreds and thousands of years for survival is, you know, a risk worth taking. But so that idea, anyway, of seeing patterns, whether they're true or not, and then, you know, predicting or applying them to situations incorrectly could very well be a, you know, evolutionary trait that we still grapple with. We're wired to see patterns, and that is true, even when they don't exist, and to use these patterns to organize the world around us. And so when we organize the world around us, again, we get back to the idea of control and how important control is for us, because we feel safe, right? We don't feel exposed. And that is such a core thing of what it means to be human, I think. In terms of seeing patterns, right? There's illusory correlation, a tendency to see expected correlations, even when they do not exist, leading people to see structures when there are none. And then there's illusion of control, the belief that personal skill can affect matters that are determined by chance. And these two things kind of go hand in hand. But wow, I mean, just think about, you know, a lot of the anti-vaccine rhetoric in terms of just finding stories across the internet, whether they're true or not, and then compiling them all into one place to make it seem as if this is like a coherent narrative when they're all just, you know, not connected at all and might not be true individually. And then this illusion of control, taking the matters into your own hands and saying, well, I'm not going to take this vaccine and I control that option, and how that would make you feel secure in a situation of a pandemic when you're not secure. Like, just objectively, you're not, right? Hundreds and thousands of people have died, and you not taking a vaccine isn't going to help that. It's only going to make it worse. But it's very easy to see how these play into kind of scenarios of conspiracy thinking or conspiracy theory. In the case of illusory correlation, people can group things whether or not there is any correlation. I would also say anecdotal evidence, right? This provides a sense of control. Even in religion, having a dichotomy of good and evil provides an explanation and a clear layout of what needs to happen to provide organization. And again, organization is another human trait that gives us control of things. The reality is there often isn't control, right? But belief in it still provides positive reinforcement and ease when presented with the complexities and randomness of reality, right? The material reality of life. And then, you know, I put some other things on here to talk about. Misusing the scientific method to this end, logical fallacies. But looking at maybe just quickly as we are, how patterns, psychology, evolution might play into this, it does seem that, you know, there are physical things with humans via evolution that, you know, guided us to maybe the understanding of life and death and religion. And I think that you have to look at Christianity, and we'll get into it in the scheme of a bold statement, as a religion of conspiracy. And I think many religions are, not all of them are though, but specifically Christianity as a religion of conspiracy, both with Satan and the anti-Semitism just in it. So in general, if you tend to believe in conspiracies, are you religious? Because if you're not, have you ever objectively questioned the underlying assumptions you're making about the world? I mean, have you ever thought about the idea of you viewing things in this dichotomy of maybe a lot of people, right? Shades of gray involved in your more complex conspiracy theory, but still there being a dichotomy of essentially good and bad actors, that there's a protagonist and antagonist, and that the antagonist is stronger, works in the shadows. Have you ever just stopped to think about how maybe that's not true? Or like how you got to that point, just in anything, like not that individual conspiracy, just in general, that narrative applied to anything might just not be real. I mean, do you organize the animal or plant kingdom into this type of scenario? Are some corporations good and others, you know, evil? Would you take a vaccine made by a mom and pop shop because that's not what you would consider a greedy big pharma thing? Are you righteous? Right? We'll get to the idea of purity, as I said, but are you pure for, you know, doing yoga and believing in QAnon? Are you enlightened because you understand Democrats are evil, Satanist worshiping, communist, whatever, anti-Jewish people that are really enslaving modern African Americans by providing social safety nets, right? Because you're enlightened, you understand this, right? No one else does. Okay. That, when truly analyzed, right, by say, you know, like a cognitive behavioral therapy exercise, things are often not one and two, right? Black or white. Most of the time, these things that we're talking about don't make any sense when you lay them out. You may feel better with an explanation or with the belief that, you know, you see things others don't, that only if you are in power, things will be better, but you aren't, right? The other thing is stopping you, whatever the other thing is. And just objectively, how ridiculous does that sound, right? I mean, you know, poor you.